A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello, and welcome to this bonus episode of Freedom, Books, Flowers and the Moon, the podcast brought to you each week by the Times Literary Supplement. I'm Roz Dineen, and I'm delighted to be joined today by the Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Elizabeth Strout. Elizabeth Strout rose to prominence in 1998, when her debut novel, Amy and Isabel, became a bestseller. Since then, in her novels such as The Burgess Boys, My Name is Lucy Barton, and Anything is Possible, Elizabeth Strout has developed her themes. There are often strained family relationships at the heart of her work. Her characters experience enormous emotional losses and appeasements, and there are frequently unwieldy gaps between their outward behaviours and their internal climates. They are often in a state of quiet astonishment. In 2009, Elizabeth won the Pulitzer Prize for her novel Olive Kitteridge. Olive Kitteridge is a character who has firmly pushed herself into the hearts of many readers. She is in every sense enormous and complex. When we first meet her, she was a retired teacher, living in Maine, married to a kind pharmacist called Henry, with a nearly grown-up son, Christopher. And now, in the sequel, Olive Again, we follow Olive up into her 80s. Both books consist of a series of connected stories about Olive and the people who live around her in quiet provincial Maine. A lot is kept undercover in the New England light, and Elizabeth Strout reveals it with care, with precision, and with respect. Hilary Mantel has called Elizabeth Strout a craftswoman in a league of her own. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to start with that Hilary Mantel quote and ask you about your craftsman or craftswomanship. How much do you think of yourself as a craftsperson?
I'm definitely a craftsperson. That's how I get my sentences to the mind of the reader, by crafting them in a way that the reader doesn't even know, but the sentence needs to fall on the reader's ear in a particular way. Mm. It needs to rise up off the page in a particular way. Mm. And all of that's my responsibility to do for the reader.
Yeah. And in each story, it often feels like a character, or each chapter, has gone through some reframing of a situation internally. And the way that's plotted, the beats of that, is so subtle. And I think that's how it feels, like that's how the characters really carried over as
right.
you go with them through that. Is that a kind of a process of rewriting and rewriting, or is it going to the page the first time very clearly?
No, I rewrite all the time. Mm. I rewrite constantly. I'll rewrite a scene as soon as I've written it, often. You know, if I think that the scene is going to be worthwhile keeping, I'll rewrite it almost immediately.
Yeah.
And continue to rewrite it until it sounds right.
Uh-huh.
It sounds truthful, and it sounds, like I said, something that the reader can receive.
Mm. And how did the first time, because as I tried to suggest in the introduction, Olive is such an incredible, full character. How did she first appear to you? Was it a process of revisiting and rewriting an idea that she came, or did she sort of come fully formed?
No, Olive Kitteridge came really fully formed. And the first time she showed up with the original Olive Kitteridge book, I was unloading the dishwasher. And I always remember she was just right there. It was like if there was a presence behind me. And I could hear the inside of her head thinking, it's high time everyone left. I saw a picnic table, which I've never had. I don't even know anybody who has a picnic table. But I saw a picnic table, and I heard the inside of her head, and I realized she was at her son's wedding. And that was the first story that I wrote. But she was there, and I really did not have to dig too far to find her, because she's so olive. She presented herself very clearly.
And the and she's so olive. She's so one way, but she's also so many contradictions.
Yes, and she's so full of contradictions.
Complex. And that scene you describe, it's eviscerating at her son's wedding.
Yes.
And she's in her dress and she hears someone criticizing
that's
her dress.
Right.
And that's really the first time, and that's in the first book, you feel her massive vulnerability,
yes.
I felt, was in that.
That's right.
That moment. And it's interesting, that's the first.
That was the first one. And that's also when she takes that wound about her dress, which she's proud of because she's made it, and she hears her daughter-in-law criticizing it, you know, through the window, then that's also when she takes her revenge on her daughter-in-law and steals her bra and one shoe.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun to write. I had no idea that that would happen, but that's what I felt Olive would do at that moment.
Yeah. And there's moments as well, there's so many very characteristic Olive things she does, and I feel that in the second book, there's kind of even more oxygen to her. So she's even more oxygenated. But one of my favourite things, as she's leaving, she's always waving her hand
she
above her head.
She waves her hand above her head.
Like,
right.
To the people behind her. It's so dismissive.
Yes.
In My Name is Lucy Barton, which was a previous book, the character Lucy says something like that she always knew without question that she would be a writer. There was no sort of disturbing that idea. Have you always operated with the same certainty, not only in your own life, but also when you're dealing with characters like Olive? Is there a real certainty about their destination to you?
Their destination, that's interesting. I never really know what a character will do until they do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like when Olive stole that bra, I had no idea she would do that. I was just feeling her wound, you know, about the dress. And then I thought, okay, well, she'll get up off the bed and she'll walk around and there's the bureau. And now, you know, let's open the drawer and, oh, look, all these little bras are there. And, you know, let's take one. So I don't really know until it happens what they will do. But I do know who they are.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. And it's interesting at the end of, towards the end of Olive Again, because throughout the books, there seems to be this narrative that Olive does sort of know who she is. And there's a wonderful quote I love in one of the stories in which a daughter is telling her parents something about herself, and she remembers her math teacher who was Olive, and she says one day she stopped a math problem she was doing on the board and she turned around and she said to the class, "You all know who you are. If you just look at yourself and listen to yourself, you know exactly who you are, and don't forget it." And so this inspired this character to move on. But then towards the end of her life, Olive seems to be questioning whether she ever really knew herself.
Exactly. And that was part of the evolution of the book for me. As I sort of watched it come together, I realized, okay, this woman who is so forthright in so many ways actually begins to understand that she doesn't really know who she's been in a certain kind of way.
Yeah. Or who she's, how other people
have perceived her. What, or the damage that she's done to people.
Yeah. And there's a moment as well when her son, Christopher, and my gosh, there's so much to talk about in these books, but I think the arc between Christopher and his mother is incredible. And when he moves, he moves to New York with a second wife, and that whole scene and that story in their new house is just astonishing. And at one point he turns to his mother and calls her a narcissist, which actually can be quite a surprise for the reader, perhaps, depending on how you're reading.
Right.
And do you think this is a term that's bandied about a bit too much now? Or do you think Olive is a narcissist? Do you think?
You know, I don't know that she's a narcissist. I think that Christopher thinks she is.
Mm.
And that he would be of the generation that would use that word more frequently than somebody like Olive, who's really quite surprised to hear that about herself. I think she has narcissistic qualities, but I don't know that she would be a full-blown narcissist.
Yeah, because it's a very sort of nuanced view of parenting in all of your books, I think. Mm-hmm. And there's sometimes examples of really obvious parental cruelty. And there's a lot of parents who are doing their best and finding out that their best is not good enough and right. their best is actually quite harmful. And there's also a lot of forgiveness in the relationships between parents and their children. It, was parenting something you particularly wanted to explore and expose?
It just came organically with what I was working on, you know, because these characters either are parents or they have parents. Mm. And so that would just be a part of what I was doing with the character and exploring, therefore, that relationship.
Yeah. And at one point, there's a character in the new book, Suzanne, and she realizes something about her family and she says, oh, my God, these people, how did I get out alive?
Right.
And do you think that that's a, it feels like that that's a common realization throughout the books, people looking back and seeing something about their upbringing suddenly very differently to how they expected it.
Right. And again, that's not something that I deliberately went to the page to do, because that's an idea. Mm. And I don't go with an idea. You know, I always go with a character. So when I'm working on a character and with a character, and then I will look back and realize, oh, look, there's a theme that's going on here throughout the book, but I don't go to the book with that in mind.
Right. Were you surprised then by how popular and loved Olive Kitteridge has become among many readers? Because you weren't going to write her with a particular idea to create a loved character.
No.
And she's, actually she's
difficult. She's quite unlikable in many, many ways.
Yeah.
And I've been very surprised over the years to see how people have loved her. And I've come to the conclusion that, you know, she's very complicated and very contradictory, but I think many of us are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that most of us try to keep those aspects damped down, but Olive doesn't, because she's just right out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that readers can attach themselves to different pieces of her contradictoriness and understand that those pieces. And that might be why they love her so much.
Yeah. There's a moment again at the end of the new book when Olive makes a new friend.
Yeah.
And it's so moving. And she says about her new friend, she's being sort of, I think, a bit internally critical about her. But then she says about her, she's honest.
Yes, exactly. And that's right.
Yeah. And you realize that's maybe what Olive has always been after.
Exactly. And I think that's what her second marriage in Olive, again, you know, she has another marriage.
Mm.
And I think that that's something they can provide each other.
Mm.
Because, you know, Jack Kennison is actually quite honest. He's honest about himself. He's honest about his own prejudices. And Olive is honest about herself in a certain way. And they that's their common meeting ground, I think.
Yeah. And there's that lovely moment when he, so he's quite wealthy, right? And they're taking a trip and she refuses to fly first class with him on the way out.
That's right.
But on the way back, he's bought her a first class ticket anyway.
Exactly.
It's just so, it's so sweet.
She's very funny. She's in the bulkhead.
Yeah. Do you think that there's also a hunger among readers for a character of this, with this much honesty, but also of this age? Now we take Olive all the way up to, you know, when the body starts failing, when you fall over and you can't get up.
Right.
This stuff doesn't appear in good fiction very much, this age.
It's interesting. I think there probably is a need for a character like Olive to be in the fictional world.
And do you think that's one of the reasons why so many people have loved her? Because she's of a time in her life, she's experienced so much.
Yeah. She has experienced a lot, and she continues to experience a lot as she gets older. And I was very interested, as I was writing Olive again, I began to realize that, you know, I think there's a myth in this world that people reach a certain age and they just stop.
Mm.
And Olive, she's not stopping. She's continuing to grow.
Yeah.
And I think that people do continue to grow, or they continue to diminish, in which case they've been doing that for many, many years.
Mm.
Anyway, so I think that was interesting to me, that people, you know, can start a trajectory at a younger age and it goes forward. And at the end of Olive Kitteridge, I realized that she had taken her blows and she was growing. And then I thought, okay, so in Olive again, she will continue to grow, because I think that people do.
Yeah.
Until their last breath. They're observing, they're feeling. They should be given some dignity with that.
Mm. As this book explains, it's not like you get to a certain point in your life and you go, okay, now I've done everything I meant to do.
Right.
And this is what I think of everything. And sum everything up. You're just continuing
all the
time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, these books, it's about, I guess, small town America. It's not, you know, Olive goes to New York twice, I suppose. Right. Is that right? She goes once to visit her son.
She goes once to visit her son in Olive Kittredge.
And she'd sort of driven past once before or something.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
But otherwise, her whole life is somewhere where not much happens.
Right.
And yet everything happens there.
That's right.
There's murder, there's suicide, there's everything.
Right.
How do you keep it all under control?
Well, I take it a character at a time.
Okay.
And I take it a scene at a time. So I never write anything from beginning to end, and I will write in scenes. And so that the morning, whatever morning I'm sitting down and writing a scene, I will try to make it, as truthful as I can. And if it's got what I think of as a heartbeat to it, then it can stay on the table. And then the next day I'll write another scene that will hopefully have a heartbeat. Anyway, the point is that eventually these scenes connect.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, I can form a story or a book.
Mm-hmm. And it's also often what's so beautiful about how the scenes connect is often, everyone's looking at the same sky in Maine, experiencing the same seasons. And these seasons and these descriptions of their surroundings do something slightly differently.
Yes.
To each character.
Yes, of course, because each character is different. And so their experience of the world will be different.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's a beautiful, particularly beautiful passage where Cindy, she's ill, and she's so moved by Olive's astonishment at the landscape outside.
That's right.
And they talk about the open-throated light.
Right.
Just such a brilliant, brilliant moment. Because you grew up in Maine.
Right.
Were you always moved by the landscape, by what was going on around you in that way?
Yes, I think I absorbed it at a very young age. My childhood was isolated and we didn't have television or anything. And so I was outside on my own a lot. And I think the physical world was, really my first friend.
Mm.
So I was very aware as a young child, without even being fully aware of it, that, that the sun would fall down through the trees in a certain kind of way, and the hepaticas would be, tucked under that kind of rock, and the tree toads would be under a different kind of rock.
Yeah.
So that's always been a large part of who I am.
Who were your influences in terms of who you read? Do you read while you're writing, or?
Yes, if I didn't read when I was writing, I wouldn't be able to read.
Right.
Since I'm always writing.
Because you're always writing.
Yeah, exactly. but, Alice Munro was an enormous influence on me, and William Trevor, the stories of William Trevor and his novels as well. But his stories have always meant so much to me. And I've always been very interested in the internal life that we all have, which is ours alone, and how that bumps up against the real world that we live in.
Mm.
And so when you're talking about how different people view the landscape differently, it's because their interior life is different from somebody else's. And so they will see the real world in a different way.
And so often in the Olive books, it feels like the characters kind of come to an understanding that their interior life is all that's all they own.
Yeah.
That's all they kind of have.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Have you finished with Olive, do you think? Or do you think she could come back?
Well, I feel like I finished with her, but I thought that I had finished with her before. So, at this point, I'm a little nervous about saying anything about never writing about her again. I don't think I will, but...
How did she come back the second time?
She showed up just as unexpectedly as she had the first time. I was sitting in a cafe in Norway. I was checking my emails, and she just showed up. She was just right there, driving her car into the marina. And that time I saw her get out of the car and she had a cane, and I realized, oh, okay. And I had to get it down because she was just so vivid to me.
Well, I hope that she comes back again. I'm sure many readers will, and I cannot recommend the new Olive book enough. It's absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining
us,
Elizabeth Stroud.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.